Guten Tag, it is Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum. I am here to talk to you about a great episode of Villanomala Live, where I am going to be interviewing Glenn Beck about his new book, The Great Reset. Yes, it is a fantastic book. I talk about The Great Reset all of the time. And then interview a Wilfred Riley, who is a great guy. And then President's Day. All of these great things are going to be happening on our show today. I hope you enjoy my accent and all of the great things that we talk about on the show. So enjoy. Make sure you are following us on the Villanomala Live on YouTube on a new podcast channel. And let's get into the interviews.
Ladies and gentlemen, we cover a lot of different issues on this show. Social issues, political issues, economic issues, and a lot of times we speculate on their link to the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset. And in looking into this, it can be a really big endeavor. There's a lot of links you have to put together and a lot of things you have to understand to know exactly what's going on. Our guest on the show today has made that a lot easier with his newest book, The Great Reset. He's a conservative political commentator as well as a radio host, TV producer, and New York Times best-selling author, Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, thank you for being on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Fantastic. So Glenn, let's go right out of the gate and get to the heart of the issue, the tough stuff to talk about and the tough stuff to explain. What exactly is the World Economic Forum and what is the Great Reset?
So let me keep it as simple as possible. If anybody's ever heard of Davos, the Davos crowd, it's the elites, the big business people, the big bankers. And they go out and they go on a skiing trip for 3 or 4 days or for a week. But it's more than that. It's the dinners. It's the connections. You have politicians that attend from all over the world and speak. This was a birth given by George Soros, and the World Economic Forum came out of Davos. And that is, we have all these people here. Why don't we see if we can design a better world? And so they have been trying. And they seem irrelevant because what power do they have? Well, they have the power of all of the people that go to Davos. And they put something together called the Great Reset. And I can explain it by showing a couple of examples of news that have happened this week. If you see, for instance, the Remington story, most people will see that Remington settled for $73 million. And you'd think, why would a gun company settle? That's crazy. You fight it to the Supreme Court and you'll win. Why would you settle for a dime on that? And the ramifications of this is every gun company, anyone who sells a gun, now is going to be sued. And what's going to happen to the Second Amendment? Let me explain it. I really believe that if you truly understand the Great Reset, it's like a decoder ring or a Rosetta Stone for the news. Everything will come into focus. So let's just take Remington. This wasn't about the Sandy Hook kids. It wasn't about Remington. This was all about the insurance companies. Who's on the hook? Remington's gone. Remington broke up into several different companies. They no longer exist. So the gun company did not settle. The insurance company did. The insurance company just wanted to, this is the happy way of doing of describing this. They just wanted to get it over with, pay the fine, and let's move on. Okay. Well, what does that mean for gun companies, gun manufacturers, gun sales, gun stores? It means now that your insurance, if you carry guns or make guns, your insurance is going to go up because they've now opened the door to lawsuits. And it's not even about the lawsuits. It's about the price of insurance, or insurance companies have been leaned on through the Great Reset. They've been leaned on all these financial institutions to stop insuring these gun companies. Well, now here's their excuse. We're going to have to pay out over and over and over again for every gun company. You're too risky. This could be the end of the Second Amendment just because of the financial and insurance companies. That's how the Great Reset works. It's fascism where, no, you do whatever you want. Of course, you're going to lose power, influence, credibility, maybe banking, insurance, and it goes all the way from the very top down to the bottom. Let me give you one other example of how it works. The Great Reset is World Economic Forum, and it was brought into play in Canada with the truckers. You'll notice when Trudeau said he was going to go after these truckers, he had to say that they were terrorists that might incite violence. There is no violence. The only violence was somebody who was part of Antifa ran their car into a truck trying to kill people. But that violence was not from the right or from any of the truckers. So they had to make sure that they got those bridges open because that's the economy. And they lumped all of the truckers together. The bridges, they said, was for the economy. But those trucks have been removed. Those bridges are open. They've been open for a few days. Why the emergency for the people around the Ottawa Capitol? Because it's not about them. It's about enacting the Great Reset. You'll notice when Trudeau came out with the emergency powers, he didn't come out with police officers behind him. He didn't come out with the military behind him. He came out with the most powerful weapon of the Great Reset, the Treasury Secretary. In Canada, it's called the Finance Minister. And what did she say? We are now registering all crowdfunding vehicles. They all have to be registered with FinTech to make sure that they're not doing anything illegal and all of this money can be watched. They have to now, by law, report any large donations. Otherwise, they will be considered of possibly financing terror organizations. They said that banks can now seize all of that money. And they said, give, send, go. They should look at their business model because they believe that financial institutions and those who provide transactions, meaning taking credit cards, they are now prohibited by law working with them because they might be enabling terrorists. This is exactly what the Great Reset does, except they went further, and this is where everybody should be worried. First of all, they named anybody who disagreed with the government a terrorist. You didn't have to be threatening anything. You're just a terrorist because of your misinformation or misunderstanding. You should be with the government. You're questioning the government. But they went on to say, if you own one of those trucks and it's from your fleet as a company and your truck driver took that truck and parked it there, your company will now lose all financial services. We will freeze all of your funds that are in the bank, so you're not going to be able to do anything. Plus, we will revoke your business license and your insurance to do business. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, I mean, what can you do at this point? I mean, what I think is really important for people to understand is that this is no longer Republican talking points. This isn't a right versus left issue. This is what I see as an us versus them issue. I mean, if you look at the people on the World Economic Forum, you have people who are conservative members of Congress. You have people from all over the political spectrum. Why do you think that it is this way? Why do you think that this isn't just a clear-cut political divided issue? How has it gotten to be this all-encompassing mass of people from all over the spectrum to now be enforcing these edicts onto us?
So there's two answers to this. So let me take the first one of why we're all involved, and it's us against them. This goes, especially in America, to the very heart of who we are. I believe we could have an economic depression, and if the government stays out of the way, we'll help each other and we can rebuild anything. If you want to, you know, take apart capitalism, good. Let's take apart all of the crony capitalist parts. You know what I mean? Yeah. Capitalism is good. It's just gotten so corrupt that we need to reset all of that, not destroy capitalism. So this, because it sets out to destroy, in their own words, sets out to destroy capitalism, is not the free market. And I think there are, I'm not talking about the left, but there are people that voted Democrats or liberal that don't want to destroy the country. They don't want to destroy capitalism. They have a different point of view on things. But this comes down to, do you believe in the American way of life? Do you believe in the basic fundamentals of who we are? Not taxes, not war, nothing. That we believe the average individual has control of themselves and can govern themselves. That's what this gets to. This is fascism, the clinical definition of fascism. You know, everybody's a fascist today, on the left and the right. No. This is fascism. And so that's one of the problems, is people don't understand really what fascism is. Now, the other side, why would all of these people do this? If you look at the world of the elites, how many of them are in real trouble? You know, the financial system is in real trouble. They've been bailing out these banks, not in 08. They said they bailed out the banks to $5 trillion, but we just threw a FOIA action. We had to wait 12 years, fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. Because of national security reasons, we have to have a 12-year waiting period. Well, that's now. Because of the FOIA request, we now know that the banks were bailed out to the tune of $30 trillion. Since October of 2018, right before COVID, they have been giving the banks money again. Something was wrong with the banks. Well, in April of 2019, at the height of COVID, the Fed announced they were lending the big banks $1.5 trillion a week.
Oh, my goodness.
They've been doing this nonstop. Nobody's questioning it. It's like almost 100 weeks. You want to know why we have inflation? So when people understand, okay, the banking people keep getting bailed out and I'm losing everything, they're not going to be happy with the big banks. When they see that their schools are out of control and it's the unions are in trouble. When they see what the government has done and hidden all of this stuff and allowed it to happen, the government people are in trouble. The media is already in trouble. They're going to lose their platform because nobody's watching them anymore. And the other piece is big tech. Big tech is not in trouble yet. They've lost their credibility and not everybody trusts them anymore. But just because of AI, this is a well-known fact. We will have a 40% job loss, meaning 40% unemployment by 2030. That's baked in. They know this. So they all kind of look at each other and go, they're going to storm the gates soon. What do we do? They've got to silence us and put us into cages before we realize we're in a cage, because what's coming is going to be decimating. They'll keep theirs. They'll be okay. But they've got to control the little animals down here because they can't afford, and you can read it in their own writing, a global revolution unlike anything the world has ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to Joe Allen this morning, if you're familiar with Joe Allen, talking about transhumanism, and he was talking about people in, I believe it was Futurist magazine, talking about AI that can now has consciousness. They are seeing AI that has consciousness. I mean, it seems like
they think,
you know, they're not exactly sure, but he's, you know, maybe he's being a little provocative when he's saying it, but you know, that's what they're leading into.
He's a pretty credible guy. The scientist that came out, he's the guy, he was the partner with Elon Musk with OpenAI.
Yep.
And they're trying to protect people from AI. I mean, people don't understand AI, if and when it gains consciousness, It's an alien life form. We cannot predict what it will do. And it most likely isn't going to be happy, you know, being caged, you know, as a toy for us mere mortals.
Right.
It could be very frightening.
No, I definitely agree with that. Going back, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I want to get quickly into what you were talking about with inflation, because this is affecting everybody. And, you know, they're saying, oh, it's 7.7%. It's really closer to 20% inflation. And you've had this quantitative easing and this lending to banks and all of this. When do you think, in your opinion, that they're going to raise the interest rates? And when do you think that we would see something really catastrophic happen?
So it depends on who. I think you're going to see targeted interest rates. They can't shut this down. You know, if the banks are milking $1.5 trillion every single week, there's something really wrong here. And it's happening globally. It's happening all over the world. And we are bailing out the foreign banks as well. Our Fed is. So we're pouring this money out. The typical way to control inflation is to raise the rates. The Fed is a little afraid of doing that because it could easily stop the heart of the economy, because we're not recovered. No. Okay, we're not doing anything to recover. We're just pouring money on a pile. And so if you raise interest rates, housing people, especially at the lower end, they lose the ability to afford a loan. Small businesses can't get a loan, can't get a revolving loan. Businesses stop getting loans to build a new building or a new factory. It's really bad situation. This one is so bad that I'm not sure if you could ever pull this back. So the theory with a lot of people at the Fed is, and this is really driven by the hedge fund BlackRock, let's make sure the right people have low interest rates. So we're going to make sure the banks and the hedge funds, they have low interest rates. You can jack the interest rate up of the common man all you want, but we've got to keep the money flowing. I think in the end, this is all about modern monetary theory, which is another long and involved thing, but it is insanity. It's been tried over and over and over again. The difference between us and the Weimar Republic is this is so modern of printing. It's digitizing money, and they can pull that back, not through taxes or anything else, but they can pull that money back once they have control of production, labor, and sales, and the consumer. If they can get you, and they can monitor and shut you on and off from buying certain products and tell the businesses, you have to make more of these products, then they think they can control inflation. But I think they're going to impoverish us first.
Oof, that is terrifying to even think about. And I think it's hard for people to get a grasp on the scope of this. And when they do, it feels like it's bigger than all of us. A couple minutes left here. What is something that people can do now to sort of mitigate this reality and to stop this process from happening? Is there anything they can do?
Or prepare,
at least. So to prepare, get your money out of the big banks. Put your money in a local credit union or a local bank, somebody that keeps their loans local and are not connected to the madness. And when you pull your money out of these big banks, tell them why you're doing it, because you are engaged in the ESG scoring system, which is the Chinese, what do they call it in China? The social credit score. And we want nothing to do with it. Stop using my money. You have to look at, if you are invested in your 401k, are you invested in BlackRock? They are one of the big leaders. Pull your money out of BlackRock. The other thing that is really kind of exciting, we have 20 different states that are now working on anti-ESG legislation, and they started about 2 months ago. You've got to call your state senator, your state rep, and your governor and tell them two things. Pull their money of all of the pensions out of BlackRock. Money doesn't talk, it screams. And BlackRock is the leader and the biggest hedge fund that's pushing us all towards this. And then pass legislation in your state that says, in this state, you are not allowed to use any social credit score to make any financial decisions, any insurance decisions, you can use, they're a risk because they didn't pay their last loan back or whatever, but nothing else. Mm-hmm. You cannot get into a social credit score. If we stand against this in our states, we have a chance of survival. If we don't learn it and then work to stop it, this is the knockout punch for America. We don't survive this storm. That sounds like hyperbole, but read the book, you'll understand.
No, you
and please do one other thing for me. Do not go to conspiracy websites. Don't take even my word for it. My book is all footnoted. It's all directly quoted from the World Economic Forum, the White House, the Treasury, etc. It's scary enough on its own. Be really careful, because if you take something that is off, you know, somebody's opinion or whatever, you're going to be discredited. You have to use their words. Just go to worldeconomicforum.org, I think it is, and in 10 minutes, you're head will explode.
Yeah, that's something funny that I don't think a lot of people understand. It's not, Great Reset is not some right-wing conspiracy theory that we made up. I mean, that's Klaus Schwab saying these things himself. Glenn, I'm so happy that you're able to come on. There's a lot more that I wanted to ask you, but I know we're short
anytime
on time. So thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we hope to have you on again.
Anytime for you, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless.
Guys, we wanted to do a new segment on the show. It's called Explain That Tweet, where we bring you prolific Twitter users to bring up their tweets and see if we can get an explanation from them. You know, Twitter only allows a certain amount of characters. We want the thoughts to their full extent. Today, we have author of Hate Crime Hoaxes and Taboo, Wilfred Riley. He's also a presenter in many of our five-minute videos, one about what's wrong with the 1619 Project that you can check out by going to PragerU.com. Watch and five-minute videos. Wilfred, thank you for being on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Fantastic. I'm going to just throw them at you, okay? We're going to just rapid fire these. Explain that tweet. Number one, reading one real history book about, say, slavery or white versus native wars can make you pretty woke. Reading 20, and in quotes, the Aztecs might spare plump children from the initial sacrifice, but, ellipses, it's likely to make you, if anything, pro-Western, but deeply depressed about humanity.
Yeah, I mean, the same effect occurs if you read, you know, the Bible or most of the great human texts. But yeah, what I was saying there is I think that very often when I talk to people that I would consider woke, mm-hmm. they are people who are kind of backlashing from maybe that more jingoistic education you still sometimes get in Heartland America. I live in Kentucky. And they're saying things like, did you know, the whites killed the Indians? Mm-hmm. And like, yes, I do know that. Like they were the winners in that war. But I mean, I think if you actually take a book like Scalp Dance or Empire of the Summer Moon that looks at how the great native nations like the Comanches, the Aztecs, the Mohawk Iroquois, how they behaved, the many battles they won against the whites, you realize that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Like the reality is a lot more complex. Mm-hmm. I'll end this with one sentence. Women didn't get to vote in the USA or really anywhere else till 1920. Mm-hmm. Like all of our ancestors were savages. Every adult man was expected to be a warrior in almost every black, Asian, native society until pretty recently. So when you discover that white Americans were very imperfect, it's very easy to stop there. But then you realize that everyone was very, very imperfect. I mean, you start asking questions like, where did all those slaves come from?
Right.
And you realize that that's why things like personal spirituality and honor code, so on, are so important. The wolf lives inside everyone. It's not a characteristic of one group of people.
Yeah. And I think it was something, I used to be a former radical leftist. For those of you who don't know, I'm sure you guys all know this. Yeah. And slavery was the thing that I leaned on the most, you know, mm-hmm. look at this transgression, and then come to find that no race has escaped the transgression of slavery for the most part. Why do you think the focus in America is just so strong on that particular point in history?
Well, I'm gonna steel man the other side's argument. Shout to my, mm-hmm. my guy Angel Eduardo from FAIR, who insists on everyone doing this during debates and so mm-hmm. on. But I mean, the argument would be, well, because we live in America and the majority of atrocities in America were committed by whites and mm-hmm. so forth. Of course, the majority of people are white as well. Mm-hmm. But I also think that when you dig a little deeper, you find that most people simply don't know that all human groups have behaved very equivalently throughout history. Mm. And by the way, this isn't a point of shame for members of quote-unquote minority groups. I mean, Genghis Khan and Mansa Musa and the leaders of the civilized Asian and African and so on empires were quite on par with many Europeans and, for example, Eastern Europe at the same time. But that included skillet brutality as well as skillet technology. So, I mean, I think that there's a, you can argue we should focus a little bit more on America, but I also think just simply put in quantitative terms, if you ask American high school kids, you know, was slavery unique to the USA? You find that crazy percentages, like a quarter to half, say yes. So one answer is that a lot of people just don't know about a lot of this reality. They've read the one book. They haven't read the 20.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to, because I mean, obviously, like we both lean right now. There's another element that's not accidental here. The extent to which the radical kind of fringe left has taken over a lot of American discourse, if you're looking at media, if you're looking at secondary academia, higher education, is really pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at any study, a university professor's last line, I mean, sociology, for example, is about 95% leftist, 5% conservative. So I think that's one reason there's so much more of a focus on the sins of Europe. It's not even just America, than on the sins of anywhere else. Genghis Khan killed 2% of the population of the world. I mean, this went on constantly for years.
Right.
But it is not focused on to the same extent.
Yeah, a fantastic. it's an amazing thing to sort of step outside of the scope of what you learn and the narrative and then sort of look out and see what other people don't see. Another one here. Explain this to me. I can't believe this requires explanation. The government of a state should not give needles and crack pipes to junkies.
Look, so when I said the wolf lives inside everyone, the reality is that there are probably very, very few ultimate rights and wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the true bases of moral systems when people are more primitive, there are, you know, Christians, the Ten Commandments, Buddhists, the Eightfold Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always stuff like don't be a cannibal. Don't kill your neighbors.
Right.
I mean, so you can, sure, there's some baseline morality, but much beyond that, I think you kind of do determine what your honor code is and how you live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you, what am I saying here? If you want me to obey the laws, you have to at least pretend to take them seriously. And you have to at least pretend to try to enforce them if you're not claiming these reflect some kind of ultimate deeper rule. So if your policy is drugs are bad and you're a country. And I'd agree, hard drugs are bad.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like playing during the weekends. You're smoking crack. Like, if that's the standard in almost every civilized country, you shouldn't give junkies the crack pipe.
Yep.
I mean, this is, people will make all these excuse-making arguments like, well, if we've got all the junkies in one facility, we can ensure that they smoke crack safely. But there's that sort of brutal realism in the back of every adult's mind. Like, if you've got all the junkies in one facility and they have drugs, you could arrest them and send them to rehab.
Mm.
Like, there seems to be no situation where giving them crack pipes is the ideal solution. One other thing, as a black man, I find it incredibly annoying that there's this constant pitch of we woke whites are the people that really want to help the community.
Right.
But it's always stuff like this. It's not always. There's just some good job stuff and Build Back Better.
Sure.
But most of the time, it strikes me that it's more stuff like this than like we're actually going to build a factory
right
in an African-American community, or for that matter, a poor white neighborhood, or we're going to move there.
Yep.
Like, if you're a teacher, live in your district. It's never that. It's always like we notice whites are smoking, you know, from some cleaner crack pipes.
Right.
And, you know, your urban junkie right. might have to smoke from the car antenna. So we're going to fix that. That's not something that we need to fix. Last thing, because. But I mean, like, even the whole, like, powder crack cocaine disparity, like, people say if you sell an ounce of crack, you're, what are you, five times the sentence you get for selling an ounce of powder?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if the people we really need to be focusing on in hood communities are the people moving ounces of crack.
Yes.
That's the least sympathetic people imaginable. Like, of all the racist disparities that exist, why this one?
Right, right. In honor of Black Lives Matter, let's give out clean crack pipes, let's decriminalize shoplifting, and I don't know. Let's just allow people to do whatever they want because disparate impact.
Well, I think, like, I grew up in a big city, and I was, when I mentioned I was a radical, like, I was an organizer for Occupy for a while. This is back, like, 2010. This is, like, real. People fighting the police.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with the Guy Fawkes masks on and, like, swords over their back. And it struck me that, I'll censor this because it's a family audience, but that bleep didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, you started seeing the stuff you see with BLM 10, 15 years later. Like, people were giving us millions of dollars, and people were taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing is a loaded phrase that my lawyers advised me not to use, but it's just like the bank account for Occupy Chicago, I think, is still frozen.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fun to hook up outdoors and scrap with the police, but none of this seemed to be doing anything for, in that case, I guess, student communities, working class communities of all colors.
Right.
And BLM seems to have had the same effect on black communities, which is to say not much. But the point I was making is actually a slightly different one.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you noticed with Occupy
was that a lot of like woke college girls, bluntly, would come down to the radical zone to kind of play.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were all these fun people there and they had weapons. And you might hang out with them for a night, then you'd leave. This was sort of this game. And I noticed there's the same attitude toward the hood. Like you hear this incredibly patronizing stuff like, well, we know some of you have to work as sex workers, but while you do, you will be safe and your crack will be hot. Why don't you try to help people not work as prostitutes and smoke crack?
Right.
I think would be a very good starting point. Why don't treat people as fellow human brothers, I think is a good baseline idea.
Yeah, it's almost like, oh, well, we've accepted that this is the reality for people of color.
What's
so why don't
do
we
down there?
Yeah, why not facilitate it for them? Amazing.
Now, actually, what you just said there, it's worth thinking about that in detail. Obviously, you can choose to be a sex worker. I'm pretty pro-sex. I'm not going to discuss that in detail, unlike the current government officials.
Yep, the kinks.
Keep that to yourself. I favor considerable entertaining decadence with someone you like indoors.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, but with all that aside, like, consider that sentence, though. Like, sure, you can consensually choose to be a sex worker, but at a broad systemic level, people are saying, we expect you to be crack-smoking whores. That's the absolute norm in the black community, and we're going to help you with that. Why?
Yeah.
Like, take your crack pipes back home.
And they're the ones who are going to end racism.
Yeah, it's all these starting assumptions. Like, the starting assumption behind cutting academic standards, of course, is that blacks, and by the way, you'd have to say to even greater extent, Hispanics and natives in a lot of situations, but are just academically incapable. And it's just a polite way of saying them people don't even speak the language.
Yep.
You know, like what you want to do is, you know, do a year of bilingual education, but then take students in poor Hispanic areas and put them in classrooms, everybody else, and, you know, make them learn math, make it intensive. The goal is to get people to know things, not to pretend that knowing things doesn't matter and admit people into your elite universities regardless of whether or not they know things.
It's just wild that has to be verbalized.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Crazy. It is pretty crazy. Speaking of crazy, here's your next tweet. Comparing the A, reality of, and B, mainstream media coverage of the, quote, freedom convoy, as versus the Black Lives Matter protests and riots is a remarkably eye-opening experience, even for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a right-leaning writer, so I mean, I expected there to be some BS from the media, but I mean, the coverage of the Freedom Convoy. Now, I will say, first of all, I don't think like mass public demonstrations generally work all that well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that was so effective about the Reverend King, for example, is that he would walk everybody across the bridge, and you would see all these potential fighting men from like HBCU football teams not fighting, and he would make the point, why can't we walk across this bridge on any day? I mean, people were doing things like sitting down at lunch counters with their girlfriends in a suit and quietly ordering a banana split.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that was what's so effective. It's this sort of normal behavior contrasted with the frenzy of the people responding to you.
Right.
But in terms of like the classic like left and right fight in the streets type of demonstration, I'm not sure that accomplishes much of anything. So the Freedom Convoy by about day three would have started to annoy me if I were living in Ottawa. I mean, it's like this, the honking starts at 7 a.m. and stops at 8 p.m., apparently. But with that said, the treatment of the truckers, which are being described as like a radical, disruptive force,
vandalistic,
violent. Yeah. The police are going and stealing their gasoline.
Mm.
The Prime Minister of Canada's in hiding. He's lying about having COVID. I mean, at some point he may have, but this has been going on for like a week plus. I think we could start to say, like, where's that negative test, Justin?
Right.
You know, all this stuff they're talking about. That has not been confirmed. But they're talking about, you know, this is a hate crime. People are threatening $100,000 sanctions against anyone involved. The treatment of that as versus the actual BLM protest that ended up in many cases degenerating into riots is pretty remarkable. I mean, like the Minneapolis protest, just to give one example, set an active police station on fire with the police in it.
Right.
And the description of events like this was almost invariably fiery, but mostly peaceful, was what CNN led with.
Sure.
I want to clarify, this isn't mostly a riot. Contrast that with the depiction of like the Sikh guy in his truck honking the horn.
Right, right. They put the cardboard sign on the statue and all of a sudden that's vandalism and they've defaced this statue.
That was the most ridiculous thing. Like there are a lot of guys on the left, I argue with, like Matsukita, that were very passionately saying like, they defaced the statue of the unknown soldier. And I, like, the thing is, I think they believe it. Like, these guys are left-wing but patriotic enough.
Right.
But it was like, bro, did you ever turn on any right-leading media during the BLM riots? Like,
right.
They were cutting the heads off statues of Frederick Douglass and stuff like this. They didn't even know who the people in the statues were.
But mostly peaceful.
Yeah. But, like, one of the statues that was defaced during the BLM fighting was the statue of the 54th Massachusetts, which is an all-black regiment that helped conquer the South. And when people were asked about it off the record, the explanation seemed to be, we didn't know those were black soldiers. And there are a lot of questions that I have about that. But anyway, like, the, contrasting that with, like, they put the Canadian flag on the Canadian soldier statue. This is now the worst we've ever seen.
Right. Horrifying.
Without excusing any rioting on either side. Of course, we've seen the same thing with January 6th. Like, people died during a riot. And this is the most despicable. The total death toll from the BLM rioting, I think, was 50. The Federalists had it at 35 in August of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So without exaggerating this, I mean, the panic and level of anger is new, let's say.
Yep. Yep. So this leads me to my next question for you. This is actually a question that you posed on Twitter.
All right.
What's your favorite example of absurdly racist or un-PC behavior by people who are currently annoyingly woke? I think my best answer for this is that most recent Showtime special, I'm sure you've seen that video. Oh. Everything's gonna be all white.
Yeah. Go on. Sorry. Actually, I feel I've been doing most of the talking.
I just feel like that was just the most blatantly racist thing. And so overtly, it's like the what we've been trying to hide for so long. We're now comfortable with saying out loud and to make an entire docuseries out of it and then post it so proudly and so confidently is just amazingly. So that's my answer.
Well, this is actually something. If you look at kind of the Ibram Kendi left, like something they say very confidently is that the solution to discrimination in the past is discrimination now.
Yep.
So if you see a gap that you think is due potentially like 50% to what was often in the North, implicit discrimination in the past,
mm-hmm.
the solution to that is open, explicit discrimination today.
Right.
So like I actually would agree that like there, for example, there are audit studies that find that there's maybe a 7% level of discrimination against black names in hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And again, even there, there's a response. Like the black names chosen are always things like Shaniqua.
Right.
By again, sort of like good thinking white activists. And they're always contrasted with names like Tim.
Yeah.
And you always have to wonder how, like, Malcolm would do as versus, like, Bubba.
Right.
But at any rate, nonetheless, there obviously is measurable racism. But it's always this subtle stuff, and it's being responded to with just, like, the most explicit offensive content imaginable. So, like, yeah, you're talking about the Showtime special where people are saying things like, yeah, all whites should still feel guilty about slavery. Or this content isn't for white people. Yeah, it's called Everything's Gonna Be All White. That one's right up there. I think the crack pipe thing would be probably the winner for me.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to get past
strong
the crack
argument.
Pipe. But another tough one.
There's a lot.
But I mean, another one would have to be like Justin Trudeau. One of the things I said on Twitter was that Justin Trudeau must be master of disguise from like the old A-Team show or from Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many pictures of him in like full on Hindu traditional garb or like wearing like a war bonnet with like the two eagle feathers for when you killed your enemies. Like
it's like he almost wanted to get it out of his system before he rose to power.
Well, but I mean, like, so the point of like the probably the most racist woke thing I've seen is him wearing blackface like four times just for no
not
reason.
Not once.
There was like for situations when he didn't have to. Like there was an Arabian Nights party that Trudeau went to where he painted his entire body black, like his hands were black and so on. And one of the things you notice if you look at the pictures is that there are a bunch of other people there. But because Arabs are Caucasian, no one else chose to paint themselves in blackface.
Right.
People just wore like dark makeup or nothing. They wore like a hijab. So Trudeau, just of his own devices, was like, I'm going to paint myself black because I want to.
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't the first time. That to me has to be one of the most obviously racist. And this is
there.
The thing is, it's entirely situational, right? Like, one of the things I don't want to keep dragging in other random BS I've said on Twitter.
No, please do. Please do.
But, like, one of the things I said is, like, I get cancel culture. I get you should try to be a gentleman. And I actually don't get cancel culture at all. Actually, so I'll omit that one. But, like, I pointed out that if you look at some of the things you're supposed to be canceled for, like, there are lists of these in university speech codes. But they're all, like, one of them is using racial insults ever. One of them is telling any ethnic joke. One of them is sex while drunk. There were like a whole bunch of these things, like while video gaming, there's no or playing sports, there's no excuse for using slurs.
Mm.
Like, can I curse on here?
Go for it.
But like one was just bitch, for example. And it was like the percentage of men that have done that. I don't know about like the women's game or whatever, but it's about 100. So who gets canceled is very situational. Like right. It's Joe Rogan, but it's not Howard Stern.
Exactly.
And the point is, like, the most racist thing I've seen from kind of the woke black would be Justin Trudeau repeatedly wearing blackface just for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. But his cancellation risk is extremely low.
Oh, yeah, because they know he's going to continue to support the narrative going forward. So there's no reason to call about his cancellation now. Yeah. You brought up Joe Rogan, which leads me to your next tweet here. My version of what Rogan said would be, quote, I may personally regret having said certain terms like the N-word in the context of quoting others, but the people attacking me are totally disingenuous and dishonest, and I have no plans to apologize to the internet, continue watching or not, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, I think it's extraordinarily obvious that Joe Rogan's not a racist. Clear. I think it's extraordinarily obvious that most people in integrated kind of up middle class urban culture aren't racist. Mm-hmm. Like, racist has to have an actual meaning. Like, if you ask someone, would you have sex with someone of a different race and then consider proposing to them for marriage? And the person was like, yes, you're probably not a racist.
Right.
Are three or more of your closest 10 friends, say, black if you're white, or white if you're black? Anyone who says yes isn't a bigot in any traditional sense. It's actually a very coherent response to you're a racist to say, no, all my friends are black.
Sure.
I've never understood that's something we're supposed to mock. There's, again, that upper class, working class disconnect there. But basically with the Joe Rogan thing, like, you know, I disapprove of the use of most slurs, just asked if you were comfortable even one on the air, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But like, none of these cancellations around the use of the N-word have involved people calling someone else a racial slur. Oh,
glad you said it.
And this is so important here, because what we're doing is, all of this is what I call cry bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just pretense. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people might be genuinely offended if they personally were insulted in like a racial or sexual manner. I think that would be understandable. But what you're talking about is teachers, like beloved old teachers being drummed out of school, generally to make room for newer, more fashionable teachers because they read Huck Finn out loud. Mm-hmm. And nobody's actually offended by that. This stuff is being used in a series of power games between racial groups and political parties. Like the Joe Rogan thing, what they have is over, what, like 14 years, there's a clip of him saying the N-word like 20 times strung together from him like interviewing Randall Kennedy and right. stuff like that. Like there's no offensive use of this, so on down the line. So we're talking sympathetic magic here. Like the idea is that if you say a word that was once used to insult people, to say here we don't use insulting terms, you mm-hmm. are canceled because you've used an insulting term. It's just the stupidest thing in the world. Like the dumbest example of this was actually Papa John. From
oh,
Papa John's
yes.
Pizza.
I remember this controversy.
Yeah, and it's weird because now he's getting a lot of love in the black community because people know what happened. Like, originally it was just like he said the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, like, this blue-collar Italian guy who employed a lot of African-Americans was talking, and he said, you know, when I was starting off in this business, and I'm, like, I'll keep saying the N-word as a joke, but I'm not going to, like, say right. all of these as letters. You know, we used to say terms like WAP or mm-hmm. Nick, you know. And slurs for every, I'm not going to insult 15 ethnic groups either, so you got to balance it.
Just to get all of them.
Jews! But anyway, like, but he was like, slurs used to be used. One of them was the N-word. We don't say those anymore, and I don't tolerate that as a businessman. You might mm-hmm. correct, like, one or two words I just said. But for that, because he said, like, three of the terms,
yep.
he was canceled. That's the stupidest stuff in the world. This is the diversity training where the overall boss is willing to come talk to you, and he says, we don't do this anymore, and so he gets fired. And you have to wonder, like, was the next CEO, like, the former VP of diversity? Like, there's never a situation where someone, for sincere, non-business reasons, does this crap.
Right, and I don't know if you've seen this video, but it's a guy going down on Venice Beach and interviewing a bunch of people about Joe Rogan and his use of the N-word. And of course, all the woke whites say, absolutely cancel him. How dare he use that word? And then he goes up to all these black people and they're like, I don't care. I don't give a F that he said this. And Joe Rogan's actually my N-word.
Yeah, like, that's funny.
It's amazing the juxtaposition between those two things.
Yeah, this is actually something like I grew up in the hood, basically. I grew up in East Aurora, which mm-hmm. is, and by the way, the hood is very multicolored. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like 50% of the people, 49% of people on welfare are white.
Yep.
So, I mean, like when there are exceptions, like you can see if you're in the Marcy projects, that's mostly black.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the projects in Lexington, it looks like United Colors of Bennington. I mean, it's Bennington, whatever. I don't play soccer. But like, it's just so. But I mean, in that entire diverse, like, in my entire diverse upbringing, watching people cheer for Jordan and Bird and so on, I never saw people make some of these arguments. I never saw people argue that the North in the USA in the 90s was extraordinarily racist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by this point, Colin Powell was the Secretary of State. I think my high school had integrated in 1932 or something like that. This isn't to say there were no restrictive covenants on one side or the other.
Sure.
Your life was perfect. But I mean, like, the extent to which when you get into upper middle class life and you hear the level of sensitivity that goes on, it can be shocking, is really remarkable. And this is the real point. The extent to which this small cadre of people has, again, infiltrated discourse, like we talked about in 95-5 in sociology and academia, one of the largest fields. It's pretty crazy. So you have, like, with things like, can men get pregnant? If you get on Google and you search, can men get pregnant? Nothing about transgender, no softening language, just can men get pregnant? Look at the first five hits.
Right.
The influence of this tiny fringe of people in tech, in discourse, in business now is absolutely remarkable. And that's what's happening to Joe Rogan. The thing is that, getting back on track, Joe Rogan has $100 million in the bank account from his last contract.
Right.
Rumble's offered him $100 million more if he wants to break that contract to take a certain element of a loss. So I don't think he has anything to worry about.
No, not at all.
You know, many people do.
And you just perfectly segued into your last tweet here.
Boom.
Radical idea. Why don't we unify and utterly wipe out intellectually with humor the small fringe left that has infiltrated much of media and academia? Why don't we?
I think people are starting to, like, I mean, just even walking through, like, the Prager complex here, I mean, it's a 2-3-story building. And one of the things that's notable is that everyone's just normal. I mean, I think the stereo, like, I assume everyone can see all of us, but, like, you're an African-American woman with some solid ink going on.
Thank
Caucasian, obviously urban.
Holding
guy.
It down for the white guys over here.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, obviously from a city, like, you see, they got the doll with the dreads on it over here. I mean, like, it's right. Just, and like, going through the building, I've noticed this in a lot of different environments. I mean, from the Daily Caller to black media that's a little heterodox, like, it just looks like you'd expect the Daily Beast to look.
Right.
Like, I think the stereotype from anyone on the modern dominant sort of scent left would be that, at least the right wing examples I've just given, if you walked in here, it'd be a bunch of Amish people and priests and, you know, women sitting around in their Handmaid's Tale outfits.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But I mean, I think in reality, normal citizens are starting to backlash to this. I mean, there are entire colleges, the University of Austin's currently being established, that are kind of forming up to fight these nonsensical ideas. I mean, just as a blatant plug, I'm a member of a couple of the groups involved. Like, 1776 Unites is the black business and social science community, or at least the right half of it, or whatever percentage, response to the 1619 Project. And
fantastic.
I think a lot of the comments from Bob Woodson and Glenn Lowry, Shelby Steele, Coleman Hughes, a lot of the people involved with that, is a lot of this stuff kind of makes us look dumb. Like, if people argue that the only cause of, like, any gap in performance is either racism or genes, which you hear pretty often, a lot of things.
Right.
Like, when I mentioned Hispanics were struggling academically, often to at least the same extent as blacks, there's a factor there is speaking primarily Spanish. So the reality is that life is complicated, and these sort of explanations are almost worthless. So 1776 is one example of a group responding. A FAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, which Beyond Bartnick, Barry Weiss, again, Glenn Lowry, Megyn Kelly, a bunch of other people set up. Is interesting in that it responds to both traditional allegations of racism. We'd certainly get involved if a school was, like, segregating and abusing black kids, 100%. Mm-hmm. But we also respond to allegations of woke racism, essentially. Like, we would 100% respond if a school was segregating and abusing white kids.
Sure.
Or doing stuff like privilege walking, where you have 8- and 9-year-old kids announcing that they're bisexual or saying whether or not their children are divorced. So, I mean, I think you're starting to see these massive organizations as people get tired of this. The reality is that everyone sort of knows the emperor has no clothes. Like, I, on Twitter, and, like, I obviously have kind of a center-right audience, but, again, very urban, mostly people from Chicago and Louisville, probably 50-50 ethnically. Actually, I don't know about that. A lot of low-key whites, probably.
So, there might be a few sprinkled in there.
No, but I mean, like, but there's nothing wrong with that. Even the idea that your audience has to reflect your countrymen in some exact proportion
ridiculous.
Is extraordinarily bizarre.
Yes, it is.
Like, white guys I've played sports with will comment on some of the things, or was on teams at the high school, will comment on some of the things that I say, and people will respond, like, what do you know about that neighborhood? And they'll sort of say, well, I live there. What do you know about it? I mean, anyway, but all the blither aside, basically, I think that people are starting to, oh, so the focus here, though, diverse audience, I actually asked, do you believe, with no qualifiers, that men can get pregnant?
Mm.
Just as a joke, just seeing how the polling response is working. It was like a Twitter poll via SurveyMonkey. And it was like 99% no, 1% yes. So I think nobody actually believes this stuff. What you have is a problem where a lot of the upper middle class and a lot of public spaces in a city make it very uncomfortable to say you don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But just like looking around the rooms here, or looking around my social media and my group of friends, the reality is that we're all kind of being bamboozled because no one thinks this stuff is true.
Right.
Like a lot of the people that are speaking out, like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, Jimmy Dore, are actually sort of heterodox liberals that are like, we want to wipe these people off the map so we can go back to fighting with the conservatives about birth control and so on.
Right,
like,
right.
Taxes and abortion, like real issues, not this crap, like how many sexes are there?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that there's almost a 100% backlash to this. You're going to start seeing very soon.
Oh, amazing. That's a very hopeful message for the audience. Yeah. Guys, take that in. So it sounds maybe you're short-term pessimist as far as that small fringe people, but long-term optimist?
Yeah, I mean, so both the left and the right in the past have made mistakes, and it depends even on what you mean by left and right. Like, I wouldn't want a king, for example, which is the ultimate extension, or the actual Handmaid's Tale society, or for that matter, modern Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
The Indonesian army, and again, don't want to be crude, but the Indonesian army, civilized, probably second world nation, we spar with them on trade, recently got rid of mandatory virginity for troops. I imagine this is only enforceable for women, but you know, that's all that matters.
I
mean,
no such thing.
Wow. I mean, so like, there are things on the right globally, as someone who grew up in the bosom of Holy Mother Church, that you probably would not want to implement. But I mean, I think that... Oh, the question was short-term pessimism, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so... I tend to ramble. So like,
no, it's totally fine.
Okay, but basically, the point of this ramble, though, is I think in recent history in the United States, most of the social evils have come from the left, and they've done an incredibly good cosmetic job of disguising this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I obviously support the black civil rights movement during the 1960s, which is not an exclusively left-wing movement,
mm-hmm.
if you look at how Republicans voted on the Civil Rights Act and so on. But almost everything else from the discovery of hard drugs and their social popularization to the end of the sexual revolution to the later waves of feminism to like environmentalism with no nukes. Like all of this stuff was mostly just complete BS.
Mm.
The first round of police defunding and community policing, we saw crime increase about 500% between 1963 and 1993. I grew up in early 90s Chicago, and it really was like that one movie, Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd get on the train with your skateboard and watch people walk on and start painting graffiti on the windows.
Right.
So, like, all of that stuff, I feel, has been a result of certain specific modern leftist policies. And that's not unintentional. I mean, if you read books like Ron Radash's Commies, for example, there really was a very concerted effort. This is not a conspiracy theory. There are people who have documented it in full. To funnel the former 60s radicals, the Weathermen and so on, into specifically academia, the NGO sector, places where they could continue, quote unquote, the revolution by different means. And I think that's how we got this sort of Maoist 3% that so dramatically influences society. But yeah, I think long term, that's something that can't continue. I don't think people are going to allow it. And I think that one of the things that is making it less functional is just the availability of other platforms like Substack, Local, YouTube, so on. Like, a lot of the people on YouTube, like gothics, if we're talking about like heterodox black women, are just obviously like really high IQ, funny people that have a good computer in their room and they've started talking about things. But people are starting to ask, why do the people in academia with the qualifications sound so much stupider than this person sitting on their skateboard in Detroit?
Right.
And it's a valid question. And the answer is because they are.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's a system that can endure very long.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I also don't think our audience has ever gotten so much information in such a short period of time. You might be one of the top guests we've ever had on the show.
Boom. That's what I like to hear.
You've killed it. You've crushed
it. Number one, not one of them. Obviously the best all time ever.
You just might be. Maybe we'll have the audience vote in a poll down below as you guys are watching this.
I'll share it on Twitter.
That's fantastic. You just might win. That's a strong feeling. Wilfred, how can people support you other than following you on Twitter?
Well, I'm always tempted to joke and say if they could give me money. The one time I actually said that, people started giving me money. And, like, I'm actually pretty financially stable. So for ethical reasons, it became kind of a pain in the ass where I had to, like, give the money to charities and so on. So anyway.
Okay, so maybe don't. But it's going to go to charity.
Yeah, I mean, so you can give me money if you want to, but the way to follow me, like, I'm actually extremely wired in. I actually used to run a small social media company, but I'm Wilfred Reilly. It's WILFREDREILLY. And if you just search that name, you'll find my Twitter, Facebook, me on the university website for KSU, awesome. All that stuff.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for watching. Wilfred, thank you for being
here. Thank you.
Now it's time to get into Throwback Thursday. As you all know, or at least I hope you know, President's Day is Monday. So we brought in our resident fact checker, historian, and host of This American President podcast, Richard.
Hello.
Richard.
Happy Washington's birthday.
It's wrong. Oh.
So it's not President's Day.
It's not President's Day.
Explain this.
Okay, I will. And this is one of those things. So first of all, I have a freakish obsession with George Washington.
Okay. I see it on the shirt. Yeah.
I worked at Mount Vernon.
Oh, what?
I did. I have the socks.
Oh, he's got Washington socks.
I have Washington socks.
Oh, hold him up.
Yes. I don't know if he's... Know. Are you
I'm
flexible enough?
Yeah. No,
I'm going
right.
to hold his leg up.
I see him. They're glorious.
And I have George himself.
The Funko Pop. That's amazing. Yes. Love it.
So people used to celebrate Washington's birthday. It was a holiday along with all the other holidays. He was born on February 22nd. Actually, he was born on February 11th, but during his lifetime, they switched, they added 11 days to his birthday. So instead of February 11th, it was February 22nd. And then during that time, so after he died, it was turned into a national holiday. And it's always been a national holiday. But in the 1970s, what they did was that they started moving holidays to Monday to give people three-day weekends. And in doing so, they took it away from February 22nd, and they made it the third Monday of February. And it was closer to Lincoln's birthday. And so people started tying it to Lincoln's birthday to make it President's Day, like especially like car salesmen, mattress salesmen, and all that kind of stuff. But one of the members of Congress argued that if you change the day, people are going to forget that it's Washington's birthday.
Mm.
And it's really unfortunate because if you go to India, they have like a Gandhi Day. If you go to Mexico, they have Benito Juarez Day. If you have Turkey, you go to Turkey, it's Ataturk Day. And we have about the coolest, most badass, like awesomest founding father, and no one gives a crap. Like
we had to
no
sell
one knows
cars and mattresses.
I know, that's all we do.
Very important.
This is all we do for him now.
What?
I mean, okay, he's still on the dollar bill, but
yeah,
you know, he's been canceled here and there and all that stuff, and
removing his statues.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that it's very important that we remember Washington's birthday. Mm-hmm. He's earned that day. And I became obsessed with George Washington because I was I visited China. This was like 2007. And I went to a family reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to relatives there who couldn't speak a lick of English.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my dad would translate. And one of my relatives was like bashing American foreign policy. It was the Bush years, Iraq war and everything.
Sure.
But he goes out of nowhere. He says, the one American that I'm assuming he doesn't just like one American, but the one historical figure in America I love is George Washington, because he said, this is a guy who left power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have been a king. He could have been president for life. And he just said, no, I'm going to be a citizen, going to go back to my farm. And that has such an impact on people around the world. I visited the Philippines and I got a tour of their White House there. And they have like his biographies there.
Oh, wow.
You know, like the presidents of Philippines had the books, his books, you know, the bios like there for reference. And I think Americans have just forgotten that. But mm-hmm. people around the world still recognize him as, wow, you know, if you're in China, you lived under Mao. This guy won a revolution and then he created a horrible tyranny.
Right.
And for people like Washington, he's almost like this rebuke to tyranny.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that there was a massive movement to call Washington a king when he was inaugurated as president, and he was the one who said, no, I'm not going to take that moniker.
Well, so during the war, at the end of the war, the Revolutionary War was a very hard-fought war, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Even though we had won the war and fought against the king, some people felt that we still needed a king to thrive as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And some people actually, they basically said, look, okay, I know we fought against the king and for freedom, but now that we're free, we kind of need a king. And maybe you can call it something, not a king, but, you know. And so one of Washington's officers actually said to him, why don't you just take the reins? Why don't you just do it? And he wrote back and he said, that is the worst thing you could have ever said. And I don't know anything in my conduct that would have encouraged that. So he vociferously rejected that.
Wow.
So
what a that's so great. That's so
good. Yeah. And other people around the world see that, but it's sad that Americans don't see that anymore.
You know? Something else that's really important about Washington, that when I hear so many people call the founding fathers racist, and the country was founded on racism and founded on slavery, all this kind of stuff. George Washington famously said, a little paraphrasing, but, you know, there's no one who wants to abolish slavery more than him, right? I mean, this is what these founding fathers believe. Benjamin Franklin started one of the first anti-slavery societies. That's John Adams was against slavery, like all these different things, but they call them these racist people.
People forget that George Washington, very early into the war, he received a letter from this lady. She was a poet. Her name was Phyllis Wheatley. And she was a young African-American lady. She had been a slave. She had been freed. And she wrote this letter to Washington, basically saying, that, you know, this was in early 1776, so very early in the war. And she basically wrote this poem to him, praising him. And Washington, who was a Virginia member of the elite, you know, a man who took seriously the etiquette of the time, he wrote to her as a social equal, and he praised her writings. He said that your God has gifted you with skill, and then he invited her to come to visit his headquarters, and that was something that probably very few people would have done back then. I think it shows that Washington was a revolutionary figure, not just as a military leader, but also even on social issues, you know?
Right.
And one of the things that I always like to point out is that he freed his slaves in his will. And when he did that, he actually put it in his will that the elderly slaves would be taken care of, the young slaves would be educated. And I think people don't, and he wrote, he wanted that to happen because he wanted them to have a better life than the one that they were born into. And what people don't realize is that teaching slaves to read was a threat to the entire system, because slavery was built on keeping them illiterate, keeping them uneducated.
Thomas Jefferson did that too.
Yeah.
He taught his slaves to read.
So he really wanted, he was born into this society where slavery was already there, and he wanted to get out of it, you know. And he was called to be president, he was called to be commander, and it made it very difficult for him to get to that point. But, you know, by the end of his life, and also if you had the fact that most of the slaves on his estate were actually under his wife's late husband's estate, so he couldn't actually free them. And they had married his family's slaves. And in doing so, it meant that if he freed his slaves, it might break up the families.
Sure. Right?
So there are all these complications that made it hard for him to get to that point. But it's very remarkable that you have a guy that's a Virginia slave owner that got to that point where he said, hey, I know this is wrong, and I'm going to try to right it. And that's what he tried to do. So.
And these are things that people will probably never get to know about George Washington because we don't celebrate his birthday anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We don't celebrate his birthday. But I always love to point out that he has an impact around the world, you know. And if some woke kid somewhere is like, oh, screw George Washington, there's some guy in China that might not love everything our country does, but he can recognize, wow, this guy left power. I mean, he could have been more than, but he went back to go to his farm, like, as a common citizen. That's mind-blowing.
Right.
You know?
There's this massive effort to go, well, just because he looks a certain way, just because he's a white male, he must be horrible, and he's one of the founding fathers, and I've always been taught that the founding fathers are horrible, so we have to lump him into that group, and nobody adds nuance to history anymore. They just put a broad brush across it all and paint these figures as something that they're not. So it's a great thing that you're keeping their actual history alive, Richard.
Yeah, you know, there's a quote where Washington actually said, if a war ever breaks out between North and South, I would side with the North, where he basically said that, okay, like if this country ever goes to war over slavery, you know, this is the side I would identify with. And so, again, you know, it's one of those things where people look back at history and they just look at it as very static and they just label someone slaveholder.
Yes.
But it's less about where people were at the time and more where they were trying to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the founders, you know, Frederick Douglass, one of the greatest, you know, American figures of all time, the leader of African Americans of his day, he has a great speech where it's basically about the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And he defended the founders.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the founders were anti-slavery. And in the speech, they have quotes of him saying, to a slave, the 4th of July is hypocrisy. They always put that up there. I've seen celebrities tweet that. But they never show the part of his speech where it says the founding fathers were great. They were against slavery.
Mm.
It's the Southern slaveholders that are rejecting the founders. And
wow.
So they never show that part. They only show the part that's like, you know, oh, slavery is horrible. Well, of course it's horrible. But don't lump everyone at the time in as like being pro-slavery.
Sure.
So. It's a lot easier to do that.
Yeah.
It's harder to actually work.
Yeah.
It's
easy to just make broad assumptions about things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is why we brought you on to clear it up for our audience. Richard, how can people support you and listen to your podcast?
Yeah, sure. So podcast is called This American President. And actually for Washington's birthday, which is February 22nd, next Monday, we're releasing an episode about his farewell address. And his farewell address has always fascinated me because it's like the last, Washington had guided the country for the first quarter century almost. And at some point he had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just to leave because he was old, but at some point he had to leave because he had to show that this country wasn't too dependent on him, right?
Yeah.
If it's a republic, it has to not be about men, right? It has to be about laws and principles. And so this was his last chance to influence Americans and say, hey, this is how you get along without me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what his farewell address is all about.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how we need religion in our country to survive. And not only that, but religion needs to play a role in our politics. He actually says this in his farewell address. And I'm doing a commentary on it. So releasing an episode where I talk about his farewell address and, you know, people on the left and the right talk about it, but you know, people on the left don't like to talk about that part about the religion. You know,
Hitler.
So, So Monday, if you sign up for This American President, we'll have an episode about that.
Awesome.
His farewell address. So.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to be celebrating George Washington's birthday on Monday. So
great,
hopefully you guys all join in with us. Richard, thank you for coming on.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Guys, that's going to wrap up our show today. If you enjoyed the show today, make sure that you're going to Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. You're rating the show 5 stars. You are downloading it on there. Our numbers continue to grow, and we are so thankful for all of you guys. And make sure you're going to our new YouTube channel, the Will and Amala Live channel, and checking it out on there. Make sure you're following myself and Amala on social media. And I think that's about all we got, guys. We're going to see you tomorrow for a good, fun Friday.
Bye, guys.